Today on Annenberg Radio News.
We got three outfits and comb three full heads of hair and make three meals a day.
We hear from a South LA high schooler with a lot on her plate. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. I'm Graham Clark. Violence erupted briefly this afternoon at the Twin Towers Jail in downtown Los Angeles. A spokesman from the LA County Sheriff's Department says three inmates were transferred from the facility to a hospital with injuries. It appears that at least 30 inmates were involved in the fighting, which the spokesman says was controlled within minutes. President Obama announced he will not endorse either candidate in the race for LA mayor. City Councilman Eric Garcetti is a big Obama supporter, but the president does not want to endorse a candidate in a race between two Democrats. Garcetti is running against City Controller Wendy Gruhl. Garcetti did win an endorsement today from a Republican. Nick Berman was in Van Nuys for the announcement.
Former mayoral candidate and Republican Kevin James says he'll be voting for Democrat Eric Garcetti for mayor.
I endorse Eric Garcetti in this campaign. There are two people on the ballot May 21st, and I will be voting for Eric.
James originally said he would not publicly endorse either of the two remaining Democratic candidates. He explains why he changed his decision.
I've never been one to sit on the sidelines, and I was sitting on the sidelines for a little while. I was getting pressure in every direction that you can imagine.
Now, all three of the former mayoral candidates, Jan Perry, Emmanuel Platez, and Kevin James, support Garcetti.
I couldn't be prouder to be standing here to receive the endorsement of Kevin James.
Garcetti hopes that James's support will help him get more votes in the San Fernando Valley, where his opponent, Wendy Gruhl, has the edge. Gruhl already has endorsements from business groups and from former mayor Richard Reardon, a Republican. Rafe Sonenshein is the executive director at the Pat Brown Institute at Cal State LA. He says the Republican vote could go to either Gruhl or Garcetti.
I think what he needs to do with Republicans is blunt what would have been Wendy Gruhl's initial edge among Republicans, and I think this certainly helps him do that. He doesn't need to sweep Republicans. He needs to keep Wendy Gruhl, whose base started there, from getting a large majority of Republicans.
But Sonenshein says he thinks Garcetti's real focus will be on getting the younger voters out to the polls to vote for him. Nick Berman, Annenberg Radio News.
Garcetti's opponent, Wendy Gruhl, spoke in Westwood today about how both business and labor support her faith, Miller reports.
City Controller and mayoral candidate Wendy Gruhl says she's been criticized for having the support of both working people and business owners, something her opponent doesn't think is possible. She says it's one of her greatest strengths.
The race is about the future of Los Angeles. Which candidate will be a courageous and tough leader for Los Angeles?
Gruhl has worked for DreamWorks Studio and owned a small business. She's also worked for Mayor Tom Bradley and former President Bill Clinton. Gruhl gave the speech she titled, I Will Lead LA Forward, at the UCLA Faculty Center. She says she has a special love for the school. She's an alum. Gruhl says her plan for the city includes giving city contracts to LA-based business wherever possible.
City contracts and city funds ought to go first to LA businesses before other cities benefit.
She also emphasized the importance of educating LA's workforce and children. To find the money to make changes, Gruhl says she'll cut the mayoral and city council budgets by 25%.
We'll operate more efficiently and we'll work harder, but we'll work with less.
Gruhl has been endorsed by President Bill Clinton, Magic Johnson, and former LA Mayor Richard Reardon. Faith Miller, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA County Board of Supervisors voted today in favor of legislation to allow the state to regulate the controversial oil extraction procedure called fracking. California doesn't require oil companies to disclose which chemicals they pump into the ground. Some city council members have urged a ban on fracking until the state can determine whether the procedure is safe. The proposed state legislation calls for a study and more regulation. Those on the other side of the fracking debate cite its economic benefits, A USC report released last month said fracking could boost the state economy 14%. And anyone who drives in L.A. has encountered potholes. The problem is so bad that City Councilman Joe Busciano is beginning a series of hearings to get public input on a ballot measure to fix them. He wants a $3 billion bond measure that would fund repairs over a 10-year period. That may sound like a lot of money, but as Emily Mattu reports, without it, drivers are paying the cost of bad roads.
Los Angeles streets are notorious for potholes, and the road to a solution has been a bumpy one. It's a problem for the entire city, but Kathy Price says it's especially bad in South Los Angeles. She's lived in the area her entire life and complains about the problem all the time.
You know, in other executive areas or high areas get it done so quickly and fast because they have the support. But because we're low class of people here, sometimes we just have to wait for the last kid on the totem pole before we can get to help them need it. And that's not fair.
Drivers can file a report to the city and claim damages. If the city feels it failed to fix the pothole in a timely manner, then it will pay drivers for the repair costs.
The city's supposed to pay for these tires. Just call and, you know, put the report in and, you know, let them know. But it's a long process. Meanwhile, I'm paying for how many sets of tires before the process is finished.
This is not a new problem. KPCC reporter Sandin Totten did a story on Los Angeles potholes 2 Aprils ago and even has a story of his own.
I was covering another story downtown, and I was driving along, and that's when I got nailed by this monster of a pothole. My editor was like, you know, that's a story. More and more people are having this problem you're having.
In its annual report, the American Society of Civil Engineers says that bad roads cost California drivers $13.9 billion annually. That's over $500 per driver. California has one of the largest road systems. But the report says about 68% of its roads are in poor or average condition. John Bitteroff, the manager at a South LA auto body and tire repair shop, says repairs can be pricey.
I've seen everything from a tire that's been damaged, so the cost of replacing a tire, to some pretty serious suspension work, well above $1,000.
Bitteroff sees many customers paying for problems that are simply not their fault.
Yeah, no one expects to have that repair. It's something that frustrates people, and they feel like it's not their fault. And have a choice. You either hit the car next to you, or you hit the pothole. It can cause a lot of damage to the cars.
But the root of the pothole problem really lies in LA's biggest weakness, its inability to deal with this little thing called rain.
LA is so unprepared for any type of weather, and then when it happens, it's just a disaster.
I'm on my bike right now on 29th Street, and I just got stuck in a pothole the entire size of my bike. So for students that are coming to and from class on these streets, it's become a huge problem. Paige Graham can attest to how bad the situation has gotten for cyclists.
I've actually stopped riding my bike just because the roads are so bad to ride on.
Local residents have long been waiting for the city to actively address the issues faced by bikers and drivers in LA. But in the meantime, the potholes will continue to weigh heavy on their pocketbooks, which may not be as deep as the potholes they've gotten stuck in. Emily Mattu, Annenberg Radio News.
Residents of Los Feliz are about to become more familiar with road issues. Construction on electric lines beneath Los Feliz Boulevard began today. The project will shut Los Feliz down to a one-lane road from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekdays. It won't reopen completely until early May. Councilman Tom LeBong says the project is a much-needed upgrade to the power grid. Those stuck in traffic in the area may feel otherwise. And the first ladies of several African nations are in Los Angeles today to build partnerships with business and civic leaders on issues of health and poverty. It's part of the second health summit and business roundtable being held at a Century City hotel. As Denise Guerra reports, the first ladies of Africa are asking the United States to pay attention to their continent.
In the languages of Portuguese and French, the first ladies of countries like Nigeria, Mali, and Angola describe the issues facing women, children, and health throughout the continent of Africa. Hadja Jene Kabakonde, the first lady of the nation of Guinea in West Africa, told the audience of more than 100 attendees about some of the issues women faced in her country.
The childhood mortality is approximately 163 children per 1,000 live births, and one child out of six will die before its fifth birthday. There are other problems with that. Feminine genital mutilation, HIV, AIDS, which is becoming more and more a feminine question.
One of the goals of the summit is to partner with public and private businesses to discuss aid in Africa. One possible connection in the audience included Dr. Damien Alexander, a managing partner at a health consulting firm.
Well, what I'm hoping to hear will be actionable projects that will get initiated on the continent in various nations. That would be an opportunity to for me to get involved.
Democratic Congresswomen Maxine Waters and Karen Bass were among those invited to speak. Bass says Congress and President Obama are in agreement that U.S. aid to Africa is an important global agenda.
In Congress, Democrats and Republicans are always fighting each other. But one issue that we actually come together on, Democrats and Republicans, is Africa.
Bass is a member of the Subcommittee on Africa in Congress and is focused on the African Growth and Opportunity Act. This is legislation passed by Congress to improve economic relations between the U.S. and Africa. The summit is being held in partnership with the U.S. Doctors of Africa and the United Nations. It will continue tomorrow. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
We'll have sunny weather with highs in the 70s and lows in the 50s this week. But get out your tissues if you have allergies. High pollen levels and a lot of wind are expected in the days ahead. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear about a budding musician in the genre of Christian rap. There are 60,000 kids in California's foster care system. Half of them won't graduate high school, and just 2% will finish college. When they age out of the system at 18, too many end up in the streets. Today in our Graduation Day LA series, we meet one South LA teenager who wants a better life for foster kids, starting with herself. Erin Schrank reports.
Say good morning.
It's a Tuesday morning, and like most mornings, Kariah Welch is running late. She's getting three little boys ready for school.
Wash your face and brush your teeth, and then you could go eat. I have to wake up very early in the morning. I have to pick out three outfits and comb three full heads of hair and make three meals a day.
Milk.
You know, then the process starts again with me. That's why most of the time I'm late for school if I'm not up early enough.
I put on my shirt.
I know.
It sounds like a lot of work, and it is. Kariah is 17 years old. She and three of her little brothers are living in a foster home in South Los Angeles. She's not just their big sister, but their protector. Kariah is a senior at a South LA high school. It's the sixth one she's been to, thanks to her bouncing around in the foster care system with her brothers. She's applied to more than 70 universities and already has her heart set on a master's degree and law school. She wants to go into politics and work to help foster kids. But first, she needs to decide on a college. And she's worried about moving to another state, leaving her brothers behind.
Okay, so what is your plan? What do you plan to do when you finish?
My name is Renisha Scott, and I'm the high school counselor at Fauchet Learning Center for all high school students, last names M through Z. Generally, Kariah's here every day, actually. Her heart is not going to allow her to leave if she doesn't feel like they're secure.
When I'm gone and I'm across the country, I mean, being across the city hurts. Being across the country is going to hurt more.
Kariah wasn't always a foster kid. Her mother hasn't been around since she can remember, but she and her brothers lived with their father until 2 years ago. After a domestic dispute between her dad and the boy's mother, the kids were separated, sent to foster homes all over Los Angeles.
I would think every day, like, are they eating okay? Are they bathing every day? Can they sleep at night? Like, because I wasn't sleeping at night. Like, sometimes I thought in my head, like, how can my mom not feel like this when I'm away? How does a mother not feel this?
Kariah fought to get her family back together. She spent a lot of time on the phone with the Department of Child and Family Services and her brother's lawyers.
Every day, they got a call from me. I was bugging them.
After months of calling, Kariah got herself and three of her brothers into a foster home with a family friend. The fourth brother went to Kariah's grandmother. It's not a perfect situation, but the kids are pretty much together. Every Sunday, they spend the day at their grandmother's, hanging out and playing video games. Their dad is allowed a supervised visit. He sits off to the side, chuckling and bouncing baby Corian on his knee. He's glad Karaya can be a role model for his younger kids and look out for them.
So Karaya's a good person. She turned out better than you would think, according to the circumstances which, you know, we had to deal with. But I'm proud of the way she, in the direction she's going, because it could have turned out even worse. So, yeah, I'm good with that.
Karaya's social worker recently told her that if she wanted, she could move back with her dad. But her brothers couldn't, so Karaya said no.
I used to complain all the time that I wanted to go home and that I wanted them to go home. But it's like, if they're not there, how is it home?
Another reason to stay in the system, if she leaves, she'll lose eligibility for all sorts of scholarships and grants given to foster kids. And she knows they can help her more than her dad can. Her dad knows this too.
I only went to like junior college and stuff, so I want my daughter to, you know, do even better than me.
After a long day at school, Karaya rifles through the mail before getting the boys ready for bed. She's been accepted to about 20 colleges, mostly out of state. Many of her top choices closer to home rejected her.
Oh, you need help.
As she plops her three little brothers in the bathtub, there's a lot on her mind.
If I have to go out of the state, I'm going to have to do it, and I'm going to do it. But they're going to be torn.
So is Karaya.
Okay, bedtime.
She sees college as the first step toward a career helping children in need, and she just hopes she can take it without hurting the children who might need her the most.
All right. Good night.
Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
Trojan basketball fans haven't had much to celebrate this March Madness season until now. Last night, they became part of March Madness's most exciting Cinderella story when USC hired Florida Gulf Coast head coach Andy Enfield. Evan Budrovich reports.
Who is Andy Enfield, you ask? He is a 43-year-old gym rat who led the 15-seed Florida Gulf Coast Eagles to the Sweet 16 in his second season as an NCAA head coach. The man who seemingly came out of nowhere caught the eye of USC athletic director Pat Hayden.
We think we've got a dynamic guy who's got a very interesting brand of basketball, both offensively and defensively. You know, we're just thrilled to have Andy as a Trojan.
OC Register Trojans beat writer Rich Hammond says Enfield took everyone by surprise.
Become a name over the last couple weeks. I mean, you talk about a meteoric rise in the coaching world. I can't remember a bigger one, in such a short period of time.
Enfield's whole life has been a success story, from his personal basketball career to marriage with a supermodel wife and even some daring business ventures.
He's somebody who went into private business and into healthcare software, of all things. So not just a basketball guy.
USC basketball has long played in the shadow of crosstown rival UCLA, who hired Steve Alford from New Mexico on Saturday. The Trojans' coaching splash could pay huge dividends in the near future. Enfield travels from sunny South Beach to South L.A., an area that former USC basketball star David Blue believes is a natural fit for the confident new coach.
But this is L.A., and you have to have some flash to you. You have to have a good amount of swag and confidence.
And you have to be able to electrify the audience.
In a town that thrives on its star power, Blue believes Enfield's personal success will motivate his players.
I think he's definitely a good choice to bridge sort of the coach-player gap and possibly turn things around here at USC.
Enfield will now have to tackle the task of luring in the next generation of West Coast prospects.
You know, they kind of know him from watching him on CBS for the last couple weeks, but doesn't have connections out here yet with high school and AAU coaches. By far and away going to be his biggest challenge here over the next couple months.
Enfield will make his official debut tomorrow at a news conference from USC's Galen Center. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
News from the White House today. President Obama wants brains to study, of course. The president came out in support of a research project aimed at mapping human cognition on a never-before-seen level. I sat down with an expert to learn more.
My name's Arthur Toga. I'm a professor of neurology at the UCLA School of Medicine. President Obama made an announcement today describing the brain activity map, which was focused on the collection of data from as many neurons, if not all the neurons, in the human brain as possible to better understand how the brain is organized and how it works.
I caught that there is this sort of symbolic significance of it. I mean, the way that people are talking about it sort of reminds me of, you know, the mission to land on the moon, and that it's sort of a goal that will prompt collective activity. Is that the right kind of sense?
I think these things are to some degree a marketing effort in terms of getting the general population behind something that costs some money. The numbers that have been stated so far are about $100 million, which for, you know, frankly, for a project such as this really isn't sufficient. Just to put our Brain Atlas map effort into perspective, the European Union effort is 1.2 billion euros.
Can you summarize, though, what other benefits there are besides the symbolic significance?
Focusing on technologies to enable the recording of signals from the human brain in detail that's not available today, I think does hold the promise of being transformative, and it will be useful not only in understanding how the brain works in health, but clearly there's an opportunity there to make discoveries that are relevant for the care and treatment of patients with either neurological disease or psychiatric disorder.
Is there any way, if people think this is a really exciting thing, that they can get involved besides just waiting to hear about the results?
My hope is that it involves all ends of the spectrum, both from acquiring the data to understanding what it means. And I would hope that, like many other national programs, that the data that is collected here is not only organized but made available to those that want to examine it. This is public money, after all.
And what can you tell me about the paranoid view on this? But it's sort of a
skepticism.
The government would want to understand how our minds work so that Obama could stay in office forever.
Well, you know, there's always people like that. Frankly, you know, the landscape of the human brain is so vast, and our understanding of cognition is still limited enough. I wouldn't be overly concerned about government mind readers.
That was Arthur Toga, professor at the UCLA School of Medicine. The phrase Christian rap may sound like an oxymoron, but in fact it's beginning to change the rap game. Jerome Campbell spoke with one rapper who says this genre has attracted a wide fan base that mixes swag and salvation.
Everyone is familiar with the sounds of a Sunday morning service. The ringing of choir voices as they mix with the organ, delivering the gospel. But USC student Micaiah Green gets her gospel in a more contemporary form. Yeah.
Oh man, I went to a church, the Passion for Christ movement, filled with young people, and in service they would play these really cool rap songs, and so I just started asking, like, who is this? Who is this? Who is this? Stitching on my heart, cardiac arrest. Yes, spirit came and gave a filthy cardiac arrest. Yes. They had a DJ that would play during service, and I went up to him. And he put a playlist on a flash drive for me, and that was the beginnings.
Green grew up as an avid rap fan and a Christian, but those two paths never collided until she discovered that she could have ratchet beats without rude lyrics.
Rap is a genre. It's not a content. The musical components is what makes it rap, and the beats and all that sort of thing. That's what rap is, not necessarily rapping about clothes, cars, and money.
Rap is also about struggle and overcoming life's challenges, whether that be fighting for equality or trading sin for salvation. But most mainstream rap these days finds value in vulgarity, and the resulting feelings can be hard to overcome.
But for some reason, it would stir up emotion. It would stir up the anger and, like, the hurt from the past. And then I would turn it off and then just go to the next song that would do the same thing. But now with Christian rap, I turn it off inspired.
So inspired that she began to try rapping herself.
I would just be joking with my friends and just start freestyling. But then after a while, I realized that it was actually kind of good. And so I was like, instead of just treating this as a joke, like, why don't I actually try to write some rap songs and see what they sound like.
And so, Green began to put her own message over popular songs. Take this 2 Chainz song, for instance. Pull up to the scene with my ceiling missing. Pull up. Listen now as she adds her own message. Pull up to the scene with my
ceiling missing. A unit for 1,000. A semester 20,000. Oh, you want some housing? Become an RA or you're starving. What about them books though? Every day I be crying at the bookstore. Tell me what a course reader costs 100 for. My God be providing every year though.
The freedom to spit lyrics inspired by personal experience allows Christian rappers to connect with a younger audience about their faith. But not everyone buys that. Some people see this as a clever guise for religious values. However, Green says, this genre has a message that isn't just spiritual.
My non-Christian peers will be interested because if you listen to the same beat that Tyga is rapping on, then you have no reason not to listen to a Christian one. You can't blame it on the music. You would have to admit to yourself that you'd rather listen to negative lyrics than positive. I know I'll never make the hip-hop hit list, cause I'm at the top of they hit
list, and I ain't trying to make hip-hop Christian. To get them out is the despite all the positivity, Christian rap continues to chart lower than more explicit songs, and so artists do everything they can to make sure that their music is accessible.
And a lot of Christian rap is free. That's the cool part too, so you don't even have to convince them to go buy it and try it. It's free, so they can just get it.
And Green doesn't miss a chance to let her friends know. On more than one occasion, Green has made converts while on the road.
But what always grabs my friends is when they're in my car and I'm just blasting this music. And they're just like bobbing their heads, but then 10 minutes in, they realize that it's Christian and they're like, oh my God, this is Christian? Who is this?
Now Christian rap is definitely getting a lot of attention. Christian rapper Lecrae released an album at the end of 2012, which charted number 1 on iTunes.
So now Christianity is not this boring church service where you have to wear a suit. It's people that look like you, who sound like you, who are producing quality music that you actually want to listen to. And it doesn't have to be an alternative. It can just be the standard now.
So Christianity may have a message that's thousands of years old, but the traditions of the gospel have been remixed to stay with the times. Jerome Campbell, Annenberg Radio News.
Today is the opening day of the first ever Los Angeles Puppet Fest, sponsored by the LA Department of Cultural Affairs. The festival's been in the works since a similar, smaller-scale event was organized last year. Roberto Ferreira, co-founder of LA's Puppet School, tells us what visitors can expect.
When people arrive there, they're going to see like these huge birds and dragons and dinosaurs that are puppets. They're going to have performances with marionettes. There is a group from Puppet School that's going to be doing Beyonce's Single Lady with puppets. So there is a lot of cool things happening.
Most of the LA Puppet Fest will take place at the Skirball Center. It culminates at the Santa Monica Promenade on April 28th in what organizers hope to be the largest puppet parade in the history of the city. Now we check in with Ashley Regal to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, guys. Tonight on ATVN, LA County Sheriffs and LAFD practice how they would respond to an active shooter. The Mercedes-Benz Driving Academy organized a course for seniors to teach them about distracted driving. And all of us at USC fell for a major prank today. We have more at 6.
Keep clicking on our website, AnnenbergRadio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. And remember to follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio. And that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Annenberg TV News and Sam Weiser. Kat Boza produces the arts and culture segment, and Catherine Davis is the newscast producer. Special thanks to Prosbys. Our executive producer is Aaron Trank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Graham Clark.